Hey, what is up?
What is up, you
Mile
guys?
Higher, homies. What is up, everybody?
Welcome back here to episode 25. Hey, this is a milestone.
High five.
Hey,
episode 25.
I feel like every episode we get excited about the number. Like, we're like, celebration time.
We're still here.
Yeah.
We're still here.
That's
coming
like
from our basement.
Fuck ton of time. If anyone, like, tell us, you guys.
That's over.
Has any of you listened to every single one? Because that's like.
All the way through.
That's like 30 hours.
No skipping.
At least.
No, it is.
Crazy.
That's a lot. We've already put out a lot of content already.
Yeah. It's been
so 25
much fun.
Episodes, at least an hour and a half. Shit.
Hell yeah.
And we just beginning.
We just beginning. And we're back today to wrap up the five families series. And we're actually kind of packaging the last two into one because they definitely have less information than the others. So we were like, let's just put it all in one. And you guys seem to really like that idea when we brought it up. So we're like, let's just do it. So today we're talking about the DuPont family and the famous Morgan family.
Yes, yes. They are infamous, really, but which we'll get into.
Yes.
But before we do that, thank you guys for supporting us, and especially a big thank you to our patrons. We really appreciate you all. And this week's Patreon question comes from Emma. She said, hey guys, Josh, you really spoke to me when discussing your experience with Christianity in the Reincarnation Past Lives podcast. That was a great one. Actually, I really enjoyed
that
one.
That was probably my favorite podcast we've done.
It has been making me think about the ideals of religion a lot. Do you guys think that at some point in civilization, there was one religion installed by a higher power to help people understand the meaning of the universe, and through human doubt and experience, other religions have been created?
Huh.
Or that different religions have been created through people trying to answer what they think the right answers are.
Yeah.
This is a very, very deep question, man.
Yeah. Well, so what I'm basically getting is she's asking if there is at one point some type of leader or something put in one type of religion to help us and guide us all, and then it's gotten distorted and pulled apart and people, you know, fucked it all
right.
up over the years.
Right. Well, yeah, you know, humans came along and we manipulated it and changed it for our own benefit, per se. Like,
yeah.
To, like, fit a narrative, a specific narrative of something.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's the
but
result
a
ma- of
like
most
a,
religion.
Sort of like a mass, like how, like a master religion or...
Hmm. That was here way before anything else.
I think it's very possible because I think when you look at all religions across the board, you really see a lot of different similarities between them, and they all sort of have these, you know, same stories, same messages for the most part across the board. So it makes you wonder if, in fact, there was some ancient
like
religion
one.
Or something, maybe something.
They're all very similar. They really are.
You know, going
they
back
have similar
to like,
stories and
maybe going back to like the Sumerians and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe there is, you know, some religion that was given to us from otherworldly beings or, you know, maybe just.
Well, from like original. Hmm. Looking at Egypt, original Egypt had a completely different religion than like new Egypt, new age Egypt at the end.
Yeah,
you know?
Religions
they
evolved.
They completely changed
time.
What they believed
mm-hmm.
from like multiple gods to one god. And so, yeah,
I think it's very possible. Absolutely. And I think this might, you know, we might dive into this more when we get to an ancient civ podcast episode, which we need to do one soon.
Yes, we do. I want to talk about the Sumerians.
Yeah, the Sumerians are obviously a very, very interesting one, being that they're the oldest fucking civilization.
And we need to talk more about Egypt too.
Yeah, no, there's so much more. So much more.
I'm
gonna
talk more about Nefertiti.
Yeah.
Anyway. That's a good question.
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm gonna go on the answer maybe.
I think Josh, maybe. You really should do like a video or maybe more on the podcast one day talking just about your experience, because you've had a very interesting experience with religion, and I think a lot of people out there can relate to you. And
yeah, it's interesting you bring that up, because it was funny. I was talking to our handyman. We had a handyman installing something today.
Oh yeah.
And he's like
a deep. I was listening.
Yeah,
far.
he was definitely a Christian and somebody that you know, believes in God and everything. And
it was super nice.
He just like straight up asked me too. He's like, I forget how do you say it. Well, he was very like respectful about it. He was like, you know, in a higher power, you know, you start all with that. But
yeah, he was like, whatever you believe, God, Buddha.
And like for me, it's I like talking about religion. I like talking about my experience in religion because I think a lot of people can relate to it. And I don't do it so that I can talk bad about Christians or anybody that believes in religion. I do it because I think it's helpful for me because it allows me to express thoughts and maybe things that have been built up sort of inside me and help explain why I am no longer religious to somebody that is religious so that maybe there's a chance they'll understand where I'm coming from.
So he just randomly was like, what's your religion? Here, I'm here to fix your shower. What's your religion? I was curious because I was wondering if maybe he was sparked to ask that because our bathroom is covered with crystals. Like there are crystals.
Yeah.
Our whole tub has like at least 10 around it.
Well, I think he
kind of
gathered that a little. Yeah. Well, he was definitely like, this is very zen.
They don't
here.
Just like rocks. They.
Yeah. Well, shit, we got like a bleach on our tub, like in our bathtub. So.
Yeah, I know.
No, it started out, he just was like very interested in like, you know, like the fact that we have our own business and stuff. And it started out being like about motivational stuff, like just motivational. And so he was telling me his whole story and just like where he came from. And then, you know, I was like, all right, this guy's cool. He seems like he wants to, you know, actually cares about what I'm saying. So I'll let him in on my life a little bit. So yeah, I told him a little bit about that. But
yeah.
It was really interesting to talk to him about that.
Yeah, I thought that was so interesting. I just heard him coming out of the room like, no matter like
what higher power you believe in,
it's so important to connect. And
because I always want to convey to people like, just because I'm not religious doesn't mean I'm not spiritual and that I don't believe in something higher than myself.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Even if that higher thing is myself,
it was really cool that he was like so open-minded to it and like non-judgmental, like whatever, like
the way he approached it was good.
It's good to have,
wasn't judgmental, right?
Yeah
because that's the thing, and that's kind of a turnoff is when somebody starts like
being like, well, what you believe is wrong and here's what I believe. Like it was more like, you know, we both have this like connection to something and that's
right.
Cool that we both share that,
right? And you know? And we both tolerance. Kind of attributed our spiritual beliefs and spirituality to our success in life, you know, and like being able to be
and being able to have
a
conversation like that is so important, especially in today's world where it's so hostile and people immediately like pick sides. And
no,
it's like,
I know.
Oh, well, if I'm religious and you're not, then we're not.
We
the
can't
same.
Be friends
we're,
or yeah. we can't talk about
so
these things.
True.
And it's so ridiculous. It really
is. Yeah,
that
was really cool. That was the first thing I heard this morning is you talking to him. That was
yeah, no, I really enjoyed that. And I agree with you. I should do a video or something talking about my experience. Because, again, I think like a lot of you that, you know, listen to the Reincarnation Past Lives podcast, you know, you kind of heard a little bit of my background, but there's so much more I could share on that. So that's a good idea. I'll definitely have to do that.
Yeah. Maybe we'll just, I don't know.
Or
I'll
just do a podcast where I just literally go through it. And you
well,
can
maybe
go
we just need
yours,
to do like a
different
Q&A
perspective
type podcast where we can talk about some of that kind of stuff. We want to be able to like connect with you guys more personally because I feel like we're always just sharing other stories with you and you don't get to know us that much. So we've been trying to like brainstorm. So if you guys have any ideas of podcasts you'd like to see that aren't like necessarily topics, but are more just like personal and.
Yeah, that's a great. No, that's absolutely very helpful. I mean, I don't know. Shit. Like we started this podcast. We didn't even know. We barely knew what a podcast was or what are the different formats you can do. So always open for suggestions on that front for sure. But
definitely.
We wanted to, actually, it's kind of funny. We're recording this a week early because we're actually going to be out of town for when we normally record our podcast episodes. And what's funny is last week's just went up. And
we recorded it literally yesterday.
Yeah.
So today's Monday, July 2nd.
Yes.
We recorded the other one on July 1st. And so today we posted it. And literally hours before we posted it, one of the stories that we talked about, one of the intro topics was there's breaking news about it.
Yeah, about the...
Which is great news.
About the kids and the soccer team in Thailand, how they're, like, stuck in that fucking cave. And literally, as it went up, somebody sent me the article and said that they found them. They found the team, the kids, and everybody's alive, and they're just trapped deep within this cave.
So they still haven't gotten them out.
No, they're still in there, so... By the time this episode goes up, I would imagine that probably they're going to pull them out because they're going to drain the water out of the cave.
Because today's July 2nd. You guys aren't going to see this till what? The 9th.
The 9th, right. So I guarantee you they're going to be out by this time. But I just wanted to update.
Yeah, let's hope they're all safe, all alive, all, you know, all's well. Sending good thoughts. That's really great news. I honestly did not think.
No, I didn't. I thought it might end badly, honestly, because.
Yeah. I just can't imagine being in that situation. God, it's crazy. Fucking dark.
But a week with like no food or water too. Like,
imagine how like I was thinking about as the coach or whoever the adult is there dealing with all those kids that are like probably like young, complaining, like 12, and crying. They're 13. In pain. They've never been hungry. And like, what do you even do? What do you tell them? Like, I'm sorry, I did not think this through.
You gotta dig deep, man.
I am so glad to hear that they found those kids, because that would have been really tragic.
Yeah, it would have. God. Yeah, very good news there. But another thing we wanted to talk about was, we thought this was very interesting because, as you guys know, Kendall and I are pretty fascinated with the John F. Kennedy assassination and the conspiracy around it. But with the Kennedys, which honestly, like, we should do a podcast about the Kennedys, because they deserve their own podcast. So there's a lot of these families, including the Kennedys, which are one of these bloodlines, actually, that we could expand on a lot more. But basically, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is seeking a new investigation into his father's assassination. So Robert F. Kennedy, who, if he was on June 5th, 1968, Robert F. Kennedy was actually mortally wounded shortly after midnight at the Ambassador Hotel in Los Angeles.
Which we haven't talked about that.
No, we haven't talked about
this. I don't want anyone to
get
confused. This is not about JFK. This is RFK.
Robert F. Kennedy.
Who was also assassinated, and his assassination is also very weird. It's interesting. I've been like, there's a new Netflix series on RFK. I really want to watch it, but my dad's been like super into it. And I think it's almost kind of sparked some conspiracy ideas in his head, because he had no idea that he was shot from behind.
It's and that's exactly what's going on here. Yeah. So basically, for those that don't know what happened, at the time, it was again 1968, the 42-year-old junior senator from New York was declared the winner in the South Dakota and California presidential primaries in the 1968 election. And he was actually shot and pronounced dead at 1:44 a.m. on June 6th. And about 26 hours after he had been shot, basically Robert F. Kennedy is convinced that there's should be a new investigation into his murder, because he claims that there were too many bullets that were fired.
Yeah.
Because the person that they said shot him had an 8-shot gun, and there was 13 shots that were fired.
Yeah.
Plus, like you just said, he was shot from behind, according to the autopsy report.
Yeah, and a lot of people are finding that out now, because it was reported incorrectly for a really long time. This is just a random side note. I thought this was so interesting. Back when this happened, my grandparents, they lived in Connecticut back then, and they were literally listening to his acceptance, all his stuff on the radio, this event that he was at.
Right.
And on the radio, so different. And he was listening on the East Coast. This was in California, right? Angeles. So it was happening earlier in the night, but it was like the middle of the night for my grandpa, and he just happened to be awake and listening to this by himself. And it was so weird. The doctor who ended up treating him, he was just like some dude in the crowd. They're like, are there any doctors? And he ran up there. And it was my mom and my two uncles' doctor growing up that happened to be there and ended up treating Robert F. Kennedy.
Gotcha.
So isn't that interesting?
Yeah, no, that's super interesting.
Josh is like, whatever.
No, that's super interesting.
I think sidetracking with some stories is fun.
No, I'm...
I thought that was so weird when he told me that. I was like, what?
Yeah, what are the chances, right?
Yeah, he like knew the doctor.
Because he was shot in basically from the front, is what's interesting, by Sirhan, who's 74 now and in jail serving a life term, who admitted shooting Kennedy. But at the time, he also said he had no recollection of doing so. So this could be another sketchy case where, individual is, blamed, working with others and they're pinning this on him, kind of thing. So it's interesting.
There's people that would want those Kennedy brothers dead. And Robert was turning out to be, he didn't go away at all after, like, it's not like he was scared by what happened to JFK. He kept going. He got more intense about the things he believed. And he had a lot of people who would really want him dead, a lot of people in politics.
Which is really interesting because the Kennedys have always just been, they've been kind of the whistleblowers, per se, of politics in a way. Yep. Like, they've always been the ones that have kind of been like, hey.
I'll just say the world would be very different if they didn't die.
And
if they were able to actually do what they wanted to do.
Yeah, and the fact that they all have died, so many of them have died over the years, is just so crazy. The Kennedy curse and all that. It's just crazy, huh?
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, no, it's just, it's really bizarre because one of the people that was actually there that evening that also got shot, Paul Schrade said he believes that Sirhan, the guy that they pinned the assassination on, actually only shot the four other victims, but that a second gunman killed Kennedy. So, I don't know. We'll see if there is another investigation into this. Probably not, but maybe we'll find out, you know, the truth one day. I think the truth will come out one day about, you know, all the Kennedy assassinations at this point.
Yeah.
Because, fuck, it just really seems like there's some fuckery at play here.
Oh, yeah. A lot of fuckery.
And speaking of fuckery.
Let's get started with the Morgan family.
So, I need to preface this a little bit just because people forget that when we're talking about these families, we're looking at a lot of different things that they could be involved with. We're looking at conspiracies that may or may not be true. And we're also, I mean, a lot of this is actual factual history of these families. And, you know, obviously I do the best I can when researching for these podcasts to get the facts, but some of the dirt, you know, because the one thing that you always need to understand when talking about these families, especially these extremely powerful families, they are very good at hiding things. They're very good at covering up things they've done wrong. They're very good at keeping their wealth a secret, their power a secret.
Yeah.
And the reaches of these families is crazy. I mean, they literally could, if they had tentacles, they would wrap around the entire planet. Like, they are very, very, they're just very involved and intertwined into basically everything that makes up civilization and society. So you have to remember that. And getting into this, we talked about some of the Illuminati connections and things like that with them. And, you know, obviously, you know, you go look up Illuminati or whatever, and people just be like, that's fake. It's not real. I don't know if it's fake or real or not, but
well, everyone has like such a dumb vert. Like, people think it's like Beyonce is like the head of it.
Right. Well, and that's the thing is, like, it is real. I mean, it's 100% real.
The name Illuminati is real.
It's a secret society.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people know that. They think it's like a new word or something.
Or it's just like, you know, just a random cult or something. But no, there are secret societies out there. The Freemasons are another big one. And these secret societies cover up things and do weird rituals and things like that. So we'll be talking a little bit about some of the Illuminati connections here. And when looking up information on their connection to the Illuminati, I'm getting information from people that are literally, you know, they write books on it. They research it the best they can. They interpret other people's work the best they can. So this is not coming from like fucking, you know, an actual academic, scholarly, you know, peer-reviewed reference here. Right. Okay, so remember that.
Yeah.
But
that's just the way to play the game when you're looking at conspiracy.
But that's the thing. And they do this on purpose because it allows them to
look at you like you're insane, right? Trying to piece it together. Yeah.
Because if you go to the mainstream and say all this stuff, they just look at you like you're insane. Like you're just a tin hat, crazy conspiracy theorist, Alex Jones type. Yep. But at the end of the day, the proof is there. The proof is there that they, at least at one point in the family's history, they were involved in these secret societies or the Illuminati. So, with that being said, let's talk about Mr. J.P. Morgan, the famous Morgan figure. So, John Pierpont Morgan, Pierpont Morgan.
I know someone with that last name. Creepy. I wonder if they're like connected. He's kind of an asshole. Yeah. The person I know.
So, like we talked about with the Rothschilds and Rockefellers, the Morgans are heavily, heavily involved in the finance of this country, as well as the Federal Reserve and the banking system as a whole.
Yeah, so, the Morgans were like all about the money.
Money, 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 because money rules the world. That's the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
So J.P. Morgan, he was born April 17th, 1837 in Hartford, Connecticut. Both of his parents' families had arrived in the colonies before the American Revolution. His mother, Juliet, was the daughter of a reverend in Boston, Massachusetts. His father, Junius, was a successful merchant and banker. Morgan began his Wall Street career at age 20 as an unpaid clerk at Duncan Sherman & Company, an investment bank with close ties to his father's firm, Peabody & Company. In 1871, he partnered with Anthony Drexel, a banker from Philadelphia, to found Drexel Morgan & Company. And over the next several decades, Drexel Morgan built one of the most powerful investment banks in the world.
I wonder if Drexel, that name has anything to do with like Drexel University.
Like, is there a Drexel University?
I thought one of my ex-boyfriends went there. But maybe
there is. Shit. Actually, you're right.
I know. Remember, someone went there for lacrosse. You know who I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. No, I guarantee you. Founded by Anthony J. Drexel.
Huh. Financier and philanthropist. Probably connected to that family.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, no, it is.
Oh,
it literally
Drexel.
Is Anthony Drexel. Yes.
Wow, weird.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because he died in 1893. Oh, yeah. Yeah, Drexel. So this bank that they owned after Drexel died, they renamed it to J.P. Morgan & Company. Sound familiar? So at this point in time in American history, it was 1893, and a panic inundated the U.S., which resulted from fear about the flow of the country's surplus gold to foreign nations. But John Pierpont Morgan seized the opportunity to, quote-unquote, save the economy and restore confidence in the dollar, which is kind of a savior for the country. It's the way he portrayed himself. Morgan had followed in his father's footsteps in the banking industry and formed J.P. Morgan & Company in 1895, which in effect rescued the gold standard. And in an agreement with then-President Grover Cleveland, Morgan led a syndicate of bankers, which incidentally included the Rothschilds, to sell U.S. bonds to buy back gold from foreign investors. So again, another connection. The firm offered the bonds for sale at $112.25 and sold out the entire issue in New York within 22 minutes. And with that gold and bond exchange, Morgan controlled the U.S.'s gold supply, allowing him the flexibility to then finance the creation of U.S. Steel, which is still around today, after an offer to buy out Andrew Carnegie, because it was Carnegie Steel prior, for a price in excess of the U.S. government's entire budget. Now, this is interesting. I wanted to bring this up because I think you guys will find this interesting, which if you've never heard of Zug Island and the mysterious hum coming from this island, you need to look this up. I actually made a video about it. But basically, there's an island, a man-made island in between Canada and Michigan, where U.S. Steel owns, so J.P. Morgan owned, essentially, where this bizarre hum happens, and it is crazy. It's caused all kinds of issues. It's extremely loud and annoying. And there's been a lot of people that have theorized about what the fuck is causing the hum coming from Zug Island. And I just thought it was interesting to bring up because J.P. Morgan is somehow, or J.P. Morgan owns U.S. Steel. So it makes you wonder if there's maybe some sketchy business going on underground. Some people think there's some sort of secret black ops installation there, or something along those lines. So
that's probably what it is.
Very interesting to know. But it's, you know, it's like if it was just normal steel production, you know, why wouldn't they? They basically won't say anything. It's heavily guarded. You can't come close to it. It's
so
very
if it was just
sketchy.
Steel, it wouldn't be like that.
You wouldn't think so. No. So it's very odd. And it's odd that there's a connection back to the Morgans.
That this is interesting.
Yeah, and it gets even more interesting here, all right? So, J.P. Morgan, also being the big financier and banker he is and having all this money, he actually financed Thomas Edison and essentially took control of General Electric Company, which Thomas Edison was working on the light bulb. Well, what's funny is that Edison couldn't fucking figure out because he was a dumbass. And they actually hired Nikola Tesla to come help them because Nikola Tesla had already figured the shit out. He already had the alternating current. He already had the light bulb figured out. He had all of it figured out.
He was so smart.
He was a genius and maybe even more than that. But
an alien that came to tell
God, yeah. But what's interesting is that J.P. Morgan actually, they were working under the company Westinghouse, which had employed Nikola Tesla's electricity using alternating current with a patent infringement lawsuit. And from that, Morgan gained control of the emerging electric light industry, in which he then turned Westinghouse into General Electric. And they basically stole Tesla's work and booted him out.
Everyone stole his shit. Like,
oh, he got robbed. He got robbed blonde, so just hard. Completely stripped of everything, got no credit for anything.
No.
And then died destitute and poor.
Yeah, he was more important than like
He's probably the single most influential figure in history.
Yeah.
Going really back is. Hundreds of years.
More than Einstein, more than yeah.
Cuz like literally if he had been funded the way he should have been and actually been protected, our world would be far more advanced today.
Yeah, dude. He had some crazy
We'd be a type 1 Civ. We'd be space travel. Mm-hmm. We'd all be flying around in anti-gravity craft, free electricity. It would be a different world. But JP Morgan saw the business opportunity here. He was like, hey, I want to make mad money selling this fucking light bulb and selling this this technology here. So they fucking stole Nikola Tesla's work. And this, basically his business practice was extremely unethical. He was very cutthroat. And he was all about creating monopolies and eliminating competition. That's the big thing with these families, especially Rothschilds, Rockefellers, and Morgans, is that they're all about monopolizing things, taking control of everything.
Which is supposed to be illegal. I think I was telling someone in my family about like just how the Rockefellers still control like pretty much all oil, even though they split it up, they still own all the little splits that they made. And this family member I was telling was just like looking at me like, what? Like, yeah, that's the truth.
Well, and a lot of people's excuse is like, well, if you go look at who's on their board of directors and who's the CEO, they're
whatever,
not,
dude.
They're not Rockefellers.
Still, they're still related
on,
to it. It's their fucking thing.
Dude.
Come on. God, people will come up with anything because this shit scares them.
Yeah, it does.
So they will literally like, whatever, man. Believe what you want. Be a sheep.
Be a sheeple. It's a sheeple.
A sheeple.
Okay? It's a sheeple.
Yeah, I know. People always say like dumb sheeples out there.
Seriously, though. So Morgan from day one just had this very like cutthroat. You know, he's been known as like a robber baron for his business tactics and just uninhibited greed. He's just completely fueled by this immense wealth that he's undertaking and also possibly being controlled by a larger entity or possibly, you know, the Rothschilds, which I'll talk about more in a bit. But JP Morgan's attempts to profit while exerting influence didn't stop there. In an investigation afterward, it was revealed America had entered World War I not for political and policy concerns, but for the profits of the banking and munitions industries, which is like bullets, ammunition, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Senator Gerald P. Nye, who headed the Nye Committee, vowed at the outset, when the Senate investigation is over, we shall see that war and preparation for war is not a matter of national honor and national defense, but a matter of profit for the few. That's a quote from him. So that, and that's what's so interesting, is that some of these politicians, some of the good politicians that have come along, have kind of started figuring out the hidden agenda here. You know, like, are we really going to war to like protect freedom? That's always the thing, is like freedom and liberty. We got to protect freedom, you know, but it's like, who's coming to take our fucking freedom? Like, what are we actually doing? You know, I'm not saying that all wars haven't been over freedom, but what people need to understand
is part
that
of it too, but
a lot of it has had to do with profit.
Oh, yeah. All of them.
If not,
I'd say all of them.
It. Yeah.
yeah, it goes back to like, yeah, Battle of Waterloo. Even that. Remember we talked about in the first one of these episodes? For profit, man.
Exactly. And as it turned out, U.S. banks, including J.P. Morgan's, lent over 100 times as much money to allied countries than it had to adversaries in order to protect these loans. The financiers urged the Wilson administration to come to the aid of their allies by joining the war. So basically encouraging war. And that's what they do. And that's what all of these families do, is they all are masters of the military industrial complex. They're very heavily involved with it. They fund it. They provide the supplies for it. And they've been dubbed the merchants of death. And arms manufacturers were again rumored to ally with the Morgans in the buildup to the Second War, actually. And recent rumors have suggested a far more comfortable relationship than the public would prefer between what is now J.P. Morgan Chase and the Federal Reserve. Morgan had close ties to then Senator Nelson Aldrich, who chaired the National Monetary Commission, which was formed to study reforms to the financial system after the Panic of 1907. He helped set up meetings for Aldrich and other commission members with bankers in Europe, and J.P. Morgan is likely the person who arranged for Aldrich to use the Jekyll Island Club in Georgia to host a secret meeting in 1910. So this is fact, guys. This is like J.P. Morgan's like, all right, here's what we do. We need this.
Yeah.
We need to get this, make sure this doesn't happen. So many politicians and members of the public were suspicious of Morgan's influence over the financial system. And in 1912, he was called before the Pujoe Committee, a congressional committee investigating the despotic and perilous power of a small group of financiers. Morgan's Northern Securities Corporation was also the first target of Theodore Roosevelt's trust busting in 1902. And despite the U.S. abandoning the gold standard, the New York Fed still houses the country's precious metals in a fifth sub-basement across the street from J.P. Morgan's own fifth sub-basement situated gold vault, which is very interesting, which a lot of people don't know this, but the House of Morgan actually maintains to this day the world's largest private gold vault, which a lot of people actually think has a tunnel to the Federal Reserve. Can you believe that?
That is so weird, but not super surprising, though.
That they literally, or the New York Federal Reserve Bank. So they have like an underground tunnel between his private gold vault and the New York Federal Reserve
Bank. Dude, I would love to just like, wouldn't it be cool if we could have a map of all secret underground tunnels? They are fucking everywhere, dude. It's probably one right underneath us. For all we know, the Morgans are walking straight under our house. They're headed to DIA.
Well, that's the thing. There are maps of like,
yeah,
especially military underground installations.
No, for sure.
Allegedly,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, we live maps. Like decently close to the Denver International Airport, which is like, you know, conspiracy land. And I'm sure there's like underground tunnels 100%. At least close to us, if not right underneath that fucking house.
Well, when you look at some of these like alleged maps of underground systems, dude, all the bases are connected like underground.
Yeah, they've got like tramways. I mean, that would make sense, right? Why would you have just underground to nowhere? You know, obviously you'd want to connect the main places.
Well, it's like if you're in the military and you want to keep things top secret, you want to keep things like under wraps, like, it's very hard to like move shit around or like, you know,
yeah,
move people in and out of a base through, yes, the front gate. You know, like,
yeah,
people will see that because like the bases are often located right around civilians.
Right.
So it's like, how do you get people in other than through the air,
yeah,
into the base without the public knowing?
Right.
So then it makes you wonder if there's all these like secret entrances to the underground tunnels and tram system, yeah, that supposedly exists and stuff.
Right.
Crazy.
It is.
Craziness. So considering the sheer number of military conflicts Americans would rather their government not have been a part of over the last century, old allegations of Morgan family war profiteering becoming quite so important. Because a lot of people don't want to think about this stuff. A lot of people don't want to think about the fact that people are doing this and that these families have this ability to gain this immense amount of wealth and power and influence and have this much influence over, you know, the structure of our government, the structure of the banking system and all that sort of thing. So when talking about J.P. Morgan, just on a more personal note, apparently he was an avid collector of gems, art and books, and he was a major benefactor of several museums. He actually died while traveling in Rome on March 31st, 1913. And was survived by his second wife, Frances, and his four children. And his son, Jack Morgan, or J.P. Morgan Jr., took over J.P. Morgan and Company and continued the firm's dominance into the 20th century. So, again, important to note that J.P. Morgan Company, since day one, has had a very important partnership with the Rothschild Empire. And the Morgan family also has great ties to the British Rothschilds, and therefore essentially became covert agents for them. And that was something that I was talking about earlier, is that the Rothschilds are sort of the mastermind. They're kind of the top of the line of these families. Like, they're definitely the, you know, sort of the mouth or the head of the beast.
Yeah.
Is the way I like to put it. And a lot of people think that the Rothschilds, because they're British and they're from Britain, that they have essentially chosen the Rockefellers and the Morgans as sort of their, you know, arms per se here to maintain influence over this country. And that's what's so crazy about it. And they that anonymously through J.P. Morgan's company, as well as Kunin Loeb, and as well as the Goldman Sachs company. So I'm sure you guys have heard of those before. But even today, the Morgan legacy has tentacles holding enormous sway in both business and political theaters. Morgan employees hold large memberships in the diverse collection of secret societies of today. As Morgan leadership swayed, they were replaced by the Rockefeller family as the dominant financial and political force. That's interesting to note. So the Morgans, the way that I interpret that is that the Morgans were more powerful in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and then sort of the Rockefeller family took over as sort of the instrument for the Rothschild family to continue on this
power
and control over our country, essentially, or the U.S.
It's wild.
So one of the big conspiracies that we talked about in our Titanic podcast, actually, is the conspiracy where essentially J.P. Morgan, the company that he owned, essentially, and owned the Titanic, sunk it on purpose to kill those that were opposed to the creation of the Federal Reserve. And that this is a conspiracy, and some believe that this is not true whatsoever. But it's very interesting to note, because Morgan was very involved with the creation of the Federal Reserve, obviously, and he owned International Mercantile Marine, which also owned the White Star Line, which essentially owned the Titanic. So, like we talked about in the Titanic podcast, essentially, some believe that he switched. You know, he
switched the boats.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of evidence for it.
Right. But as far as the motive being, he wanted to kill Benjamin Guggenheim, Isa Strauss, and Jacob Astor, that there's nothing to confirm that. Like, there's right. a lot of like sketchy things, but there's not like official awesome. Concrete evidence to.
Well, I feel like if he did do it and it's true, the whole conspiracy, then like, it was probably not just for one reason. It was probably multiple reasons. Like when you look at any conspiracy, JFK, 9/11, any of those things, it's normally like multiple motives, not just one specific thing.
Especially for this. This was such a huge event in history, and like right. so many, like thousands of people died. Like this is yeah. like, this was like the 9/11 of that day. If this was some sort
oh,
of,
totally.
You know, like false attack yeah. or something.
And it was just so weird.
So a lot of people think that he switched the ships. He switched the Titanic with the Olympic, which had been previously damaged really bad, and that was, you know, the ship that actually went down instead of the Titanic, and did it for insurance scams and all that sort of thing. So that's kind of one of the biggest conspiracies the Morgans are involved with is the Nikola Tesla. Financing and then stealing his work essentially to then create General Electric, which became the largest electric company, and then the Titanic, the sinking of the Titanic. So those are the two big ones for the Morgans. So as you can see, extremely intertwined into the banking system and the early financial system.
It just blows my mind how much it all connects every single time. All these families are just so interwoven.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so weird.
It's
like
very
even
weird.
More than I thought it was before we started this.
And that's the thing about it. And that's the thing you can't deny. That's the thing that a lot of people don't even understand is that
they
all know each other. They've all been intertwined. They all
Most
attend
of them
the
work
same
together.
Things.
Yeah.
They all have owned, been business partners, they've all been, you know, associating with one another for hundreds of years potentially, and are a part of these secret societies together. So now let's get into the DuPonts, all right? And the DuPont family was one I literally did not know much about whatsoever before I researched it. And what's going to probably blow your mind is that the DuPonts are actually very, very, what's the word? Evil. if these claims and if all, you know, all of these different things that they've been involved with are true, which a lot of it is 100% true. All right. So the DuPont family. A lot of when you look up DuPont, there's a lot of different spellings for it. There's people spell it all sorts of different ways, and maybe that's to throw people off and to sort of create confusion. But it's spelled D-U-P-O-N-T. And in English, the second syllable is accented because it's French. They're a French fella, French family.
French fella.
That just came to my mind.
We are the Millers. LeBron.
LeBron. Little French fella.
Oh, little French fella. Dude, that is my favorite movie. I have to say, love that one. We are the Millers. It's so funny. I love that it takes place in Denver, too. It's just so good.
Yeah.
Anyway, little
side. Yeah, if you haven't seen that, definitely watch that. That's so funny. All right, so let's talk about the Illuminati for a sec. All right. Open those minds up. Put those tin hats on for a sec. All right. So there's an author by the name John Dale who wrote a book called The Prince and the Paranormal, which goes into secret occult activities of the British royal family, actually, especially Prince Charles, which I need to look into that more because I'm sure there's some more stuff there. But also many other royal family members too. And besides the secret occult activities of the British monarch, they have been openly leaders of Freemasonry. And the DuPonts are similar to these families in that they too are a dynasty. And they too have a very public image, and they have a totally hidden life, which is true. I had to dig so hard for this because they scatter
stuff. You were in there digging.
I mean, I was digging a trench to find this. And I mean, you got to dig through so much shit
and so much bullshit.
The gold. Right. I mean, it's no, seriously, a lot. Like, it's like when you look into the stuff, you have to, you know, you go to your normal sources where you find stuff, but then like they don't even have that much. You're like, there's got to be more to these guys. And then you have to go to like 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 pages down to, you know, the search engine results and really start digging into and finding a lot of these smaller. Because that's the thing about it is like, obviously Google keeps all the shit off of the first couple pages where people are going to find it when Googling it.
But it's interesting how it's like with these five families, it's specifically that hard to find things.
Right. No, that's the thing. Like,
way easy to find information on the theory that Post Malone and Justin Bieber are the same person, because it's fucking not true. But they put the stuff that's true towards the back. There's a reason it's so hidden. It almost makes it more believable, the fact that the extents they go to hide it, you know?
Yeah. And what's interesting to me is there's not, like, you would think that with a lot of these claims, especially like the Illuminati, New World Order stuff, like, you would think that there would be, like, stamped on, like, first page of the search results, like, they are not associated, here's why, blah, 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 just debunking everything and, like, completely, like, making sure that if people are searching for it and are looking into it more, that they are instantly, like, turned away, be like, oh, it's bullshit.
With 9/11, too, like, there's the first page. You know, the first page is going to show you debunking articles, but they can't debunk every single thing. Like, yes, of course, with every theory, there's going to be things that are debunked, clearly. But they can't debunk all of it. But people will just be like, oh, it's debunked. It says right here. Moving on.
Well, that's the thing. And with this, it's not like that at all. Like, you Mm-mm. like you really have to dig pretty far to find the actual, like, people that are doing the difficult job of, like, hunting down these families' histories, because they are very, very secretive about what they put out there, how they're portrayed, and, you know, what information is easily accessible to the public about them. And the DuPonts are absolutely no different. In fact, some people said the DuPonts have better control over the press's coverage of them than the British royal family does. And I actually believe that, because, I mean, how many people have ever even heard of DuPont, like, or before this podcast? Like, have you ever heard of DuPont or seen it anywhere? No. And once you find out what these guys do, you're going to be like, holy shit, how have we never heard of these guys? So one of the clues that this family is a top satanic family, which, when talking about the Illuminati, you know, the Illuminati is centered around a satanic cult, essentially, and satanic rituals, and essentially Satanism. That's what people believe. And one of the clues is that the frequency of marriage is between relatives of the DuPont descendants. And that was something we covered in, like, Rothschilds and stuff, is like a lot of these families, the family members marry other family members, which is really weird and bizarre, but it makes sense because they're trying. It's all about the bloodlines. Like, that's the whole thing, is there's their bloodlines are, they believe that their bloodlines are higher or, you know, more important than everybody else's. They believe it carries this occult power that they possess, essentially. And unless the person has the correct blood, he or she will not rise to the highest levels of Satanism. It's essentially what they believe. Yeah. I know.
Wild.
And that's one thing is like,
it's interesting how much blood comes into all this stuff always too.
Yeah. And it goes back hundreds of years too. And this is like history. This is not, it's not made up shit. This is real shit here, which makes it even crazier. But the DuPonts have intermarried with the Balls and the Gardeners, which are other bloodlines involved in the Illuminati. And so if we start looking at, let's talk a little bit about their family history, because I think it's important to understand sort of how the family developed. So the sort of first founding member of the family was Eleuther Irene DuPont, who founded the DuPont family empire in 1802. And the DuPont family rooted itself in U.S. affairs using back channel connections with Napoleon the Great, essentially, to negotiate the Louisiana Purchase in 1803. And after being held as a prisoner of war during the French Revolution, Eleuther Irene DuPont fled to the United States, where he founded the empire responsible for inventions such as nylon, Teflon, Kevlar, and beginning his empire with a gunpowder mill in Delaware. After becoming the... Sorry. You all right over there?
I'm coughing. I have like something in my throat and I don't know what to do on the podcast. Every time I have to cough and like... Because I don't want to do it into the mic. So I'm like, do I fucking leave for a second? Just do I go stand over there in the corner and cough?
Yes, go in the corner.
I kind of need to. I have a cough in my chest.
You have a cough in your chest?
Yes.
All right, Kendall's got a cough in her chest, everybody. So if you hear a cough... Wow, that was so loud. Still.
Jesus.
You dying over there?
Keep going.
All right, sorry. So after the DuPonts became the largest supplier of gunpowder to the U.S. military in the early 1800s, they began manufacturing dynamite, growing to such incredible proportions through collusion with its competition in the Powder Trust to fix prices. It's a monopoly on the industry, which was broken up under the Sherman Antitrust Act. So again, creating... You all right? You back?
Yeah, I'm back.
So again,
cough in their ears.
It's okay. Take a deep breath. So again, they're starting their empire around war, supplies for war, which in this case is gunpowder and dynamite, and as well as immediately creating a monopoly on it. And some claim that the French government actually gave Eleuther DuPont top secret machinery and plans to produce the best gunpowder possible in that day. And apparently it was a state-of-the-art technology, and they supplied the manpower to help get it started. The DuPonts had friends in various places that helped them in numerous ways, getting financing, business, and land. I wonder who helped them. Eleuther Irene DuPont was intelligent, worked very hard, and worked with patience. If he hadn't had so many commendable qualities, then the DuPont family may have sunk back in history and another family taken their place. So it's very interesting, though, because these families are still, like, the people that start these empires are all very intelligent, it seems, very hardworking. You know, you don't hear, like, some lazy piece of shit who, like, became one of these elite families. Like,
yeah, well, no shit.
You don't hear that. You know, they're all extremely intelligent, extremely advanced, and, you know, are elite.
And maybe not the people who are here today, but like the original creators of the family.
Right.
I'm just saying, it's not like George Bush is considered like massively intelligent or anything. Not that he's dumb, but like.
There's an old saying in Texas.
Noah's in Tennessee.
Noah's in Tennessee. God. Bushisms. So funny. So the DuPonts.
Shame on.
Shame on you.
Can't stop. God. Shame on you.
Shame on.
Fool me, can't get fooled again.
We can't go fooled again.
All right, we're done. Okay.
Oh, bushy boy. Oh,
bushy boy.
Bushy boy.
Bushy boy. You're a war criminal.
He got screwed though.
He screwed more people than he screwed
himself
him.
Though. Yeah.
Yeah, and screwed a lot of others.
Oh yeah. His family did for sure.
Yeah,
so
I guess. Yeah. Won't even get into all that.
No, go watch that episode. So the DuPont gunpowder factories at the time dominated the industry, and within only a short amount of time after getting started in 1802, they had the best quality gunpowder in the world. In every war in the United States, or that the United States fought since 1802, starting with the war against Tripoli and the Barbary pirates until the incursion into Somalia this past couple of years, the American military is dependent upon DuPont gunpowder. So they've, again, been supplying war. I mean, they're a part of this military-industrial complex I was talking about. And that's also what's so interesting, is that the Bushes especially are heavily tied to the military-industrial complex. They all benefit from it. So that's it's very interesting to note about that. But Henry DuPont, from 1812 to 1889, took over command of the gunpowder manufacturing when he was 38. He was very authoritarian and was known as Boss Henry. His narrow-minded, backward, and authoritarian thinking ran the DuPont Company into the ground in spite of their control of the gunpowder market. And when he died, Alfred DuPont, Pierre Samuel DuPont II, and Thomas Coleman DuPont took over the various DuPont manufacturing affairs. They bought out the rest of the gunpowder manufacturers, giving them an absolute monopoly in the munitions industry. Again, just like the Morgans monopolizing their industry. They were able to modernize the DuPont factories and put the DuPont businesses back into top shape. And on August 22, 1857, the DuPonts lost their first family member to an explosion, Alexis DuPont. The DuPonts had always been in the forefront on safety at their gunpowder factories, but that did not prevent them from having to suffer repeated explosions over the years. An explosion at a gunpowder factory is easily set off and very deadly, and this happened a lot. And the tutor that was hired in 1852 to tutor the DuPont children, R. Page Williamson, described in his letters to Virginia that the DuPont children were very spoiled and difficult to work with. You think?
Yeah.
God. And in 1872, Henry DuPont brought together Laughlin and Rand and the Hazard Powder Company in order to form a gunpowder trade association. What the association did was to eliminate competition between the three largest manufacturers of gunpowder and create a monopoly for the DuPont cartel. Eventually, DuPont bought out the other two, plus numerous other small gunpowder companies. And this trend started way back and continues today with the DuPont businesses. So anybody that believes that the DuPonts and the rest of these elite families are capitalists should definitely take a look at history a bit more. And that's the argument, because clearly they do not believe in capitalism. They believe in monopolies.
Come on. You know what? I feel like there are so many people out there that literally just don't want to believe this stuff. And it makes me frustrated, because if anyone who has listened to all five of our podcasts, or I guess four of our podcasts on these families, and you walk away with fucking nothing, you're not paying attention. Like, clearly something is going on. Maybe it's not exactly what everyone thinks.
Because it's an illusion. It's literally a fucking illusion they've created. And we've been programmed to believe the illusion.
Right.
And the illusion that this is a capitalist society, everybody can free, you can do your own thing and start your own thing, which is true to some extent. It's true to some extent.
Yes.
But if you're talking about the main industries that run the world, energy, food, you know, all those different things, you look at who runs those industries and it's the same fucking people across the board.
And in school, like in basic history class in high school, you learn that the monopolies were shut down.
Right.
That's
well,
over.
That's the thing is, like,
it's
that's
not,
what
homies,
the government wants
over.
To portray, is they pass all these acts, these legislature, all this blah, 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 blah,
yeah.
to prevent this shit from happening. But these elites are smart, and they fucking they run these politicians.
They probably created the rules.
They did. They're probably like, oh, here's what we'll do. We'll fucking make this law to make everybody feel better that we're not fucking monopolizing. But then what we'll do is we'll just split it up, call it different names. But at the end of the day, when it comes back to the fucking, you know, who's sitting at the table, it's still going to be us.
Yeah. So, like, to anyone out there who still doubts this shit after listening to all of these families, like, come at us. I want to hear your comment for why you think these people are just completely normal, rich families. Like, come on. This is dumb at this point. If you can't see this stuff, you're just closing your ears and saying la, 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 la. Because clearly, I mean, this is so obvious, and it's almost like a slap in the face to us as humans that we're being fed such bullshit, and that the majority of us fucking fall for it. Yes. Sorry, just a little moment of anger. Because it's frustrating. And I hate when people come to me and like, oh, you're just crazy. Yeah, I'm just fucking crazy, even though this is all like facts, dude. Fact check me if you don't believe it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of like crime. It's like, you know, innocent until proven guilty. But in this in this case, it's like, this is the best we know, and prove me otherwise if it's not true. Like, show me how it's not true.
And all five of them, it just happens to be...
well, that's the thing. And the fact is you can't like completely undebunk it, because the secrecy, the amount of secrecy, and like some, I can't stand people that are like, you can't keep things secret in this day and age. Like people that say like, there's no secrecy. Nobody can keep secrets.
You are literally living in a baby world if you think there are no fucking secrets. Open your eyes, dude. Yes, there are.
Clearly there are.
I know. I get comments obvious. Like that all the time. Like, they would never be able to pull this off because it would be the biggest secret ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude.
But yet they've been able to do it. And we have because literally found out about things.
They own
things.
Our communication.
There's literally proof that the government can hide things, cover it up, and we find out about it when they want us to find out about it. This has been proven in
history.
If
you are a person that seriously wants to believe that the government has never lied, never covered anything up, and never faked anything, dude...
Then
I'm
you're not
sorry.
Looking,
you
you're
are
not
really, really,
enough.
Really like living in a, I don't even know, a cupcake world, because that's just not true.
You're living in Candyland, motherfucker.
Yeah, for real. Like, come on, dude. It's
well,
just
that's
so
that. That's
annoying.
Why. That's when we say stay woke. We're talking about staying woke to
just
what's
waking up.
What's really
when
going
we say
on?
Stay woke. I mean, some people are like, that's so lame. What else are you supposed to say? Stay woke.
I love that. That should be our song.
Yeah, that should be.
Seriously,
why
isn't that our intro song?
The reason we have silence is because we've been silent for too long, if you didn't catch on. But
yeah, exactly.
Maybe that should be our new outro song. It's like, stay woke. Yeah. That'd be good.
That's actually a good idea, I think. I like
that.
Okay,
we'll
cue that up today. All right. So, and that's exactly the point that we're trying to make, though, is that the DuPonts are shrouded in so much secrecy that literally their secrecy is not even known. Like, this is only what, like, people that have, like, devoted a large amount of times have been able to drum up about these people by digging through all sorts of different things, because they hide their trails so well.
Yeah, well, they have so much control. It's not hard for them to do that.
No, that's the thing. So,
especially when you're working with like these other families that have control in different areas, like they can all work for each other, cover each other up,
mm-hmm.
and hide shit together. Makes it a lot easier.
Right. Exactly. And that's the thing about the DuPonts is like they have over time, and they have kept the industry and the business in the family and continue to pass it along. And during this time in the 1900s, they had gunpowder plants in Pennsylvania, Delaware, Iowa, and Tennessee. And the DuPonts are very much the same today, except that their assets are 10 times better hidden than they were before. And not only from outsiders, but from themselves. So that's the thing. The way that I've been explained secrecy works is you compartmentalize everything. It's on a need to know basis. You only tell people as much as they need to know, mm-hmm. and nothing more. And they can't ask questions. That's all they know. And that's how these elite families do it too. They only tell the family members as much as they need to know. But at the end of the day, they're all working for the same thing, you know?
Yeah.
They're all part of the bigger dynasty here. And that's exactly how the DuPonts have operated for this long and maintain this amazing ability to basically make themselves invisible. I mean, to their own family and to the world. And however similar to JP Morgan, the DuPont's supposed breakup allowed the family to maintain dominance over the munitions industry. And during the First World War, it supplied nearly 40% of all munitions to Allied forces. So they worked with JP Morgan, just like we just talked about with the Morgan family. And during World War I, the DuPonts made a mint. The company had $9 million surplus in its treasury. And the result was that the DuPont absorbed General Motors. That's another thing. The DuPonts literally own General Motors, which is basically fucking Chevy. Is it Ford? No, Ford's not General Motors. But yeah, like Chevy. Like, fuck. I got to look it up. I'm sorry. I can't General Motors. I know it's Chevy.
I don't know anything about cars, so I can't help you there.
Buick, Cadillac, GMC, Chevrolet. Mm. So the DuPonts owned the General Motors company at one point.
Damn.
And at this point in time, this is when the DuPonts also went into the chemical business, which is the biggest thing that they're known for. And at the time, the American government had seized the German dye trust, and the DuPonts were actually given their patents. And this is after World War II. The DuPonts began to build a great chemical empire on the synthetic, such as shatterproof glass, paints, rayon, nylon, dyes, photographic film, rubber, chemicals, drugs, etc. Basically fucking everything that is useful, they created. And only the Dow Chemical Company is any competition with the DuPont chemical operation at this point in time. And what you all need to know is that literally every single American, pretty much every person probably, uses a DuPont product. And when I was researching this, this is where learning about the DuPont industries and what they produce is just completely astonishing, because literally they create these chemicals, they literally, like, their chemicals are in products of essentially almost everything that we use. They create herbivores and fertilizers for farming, cosmetics and nylons for women, chemicals for all types of industrial production, textiles of all kinds, cleaning fluids such as when your clothes are dry cleaned. And in the 20th century, the DuPonts developed many polymers such as Vespel, neoprene, nylon, Corian, Teflon, Mylar, Kapton, Kevlar, Zemdrain, M5, flat fiber.
So pretty much fucking everything.
Pretty much fucking everything has one of their fucking polymers in it, especially.
So we need them. That's the thing with these five families, too, is like we end up needing them.
Right.
Like,
well, that's the thing. We're dependent on all of these things because they create it.
All of us, whether we want to admit it or not, have supported them and helped them.
Absolutely. Because they monopolized it. That's what they did. They monopolized this industry. They're the only ones that can create it. They control it. They can do what they want with it. And we're forced to buy it. Like, there's no way around it. I mean, we need this stuff for so many things.
Yep. If you're like involved in a bank, if you buy anything, if you eat food, if you buy gasoline, you're supporting these families. And like, what are we supposed to do? Just stop? Like, we're not going to stop.
Clearly. No, I mean, kids. There's no
way.
We're
supposed to go live in a teepee and like just not talk to anyone,
That's some people's answer, but.
Yeah, I mean, some people can do that and good for them.
That's great. If you can live that free lifestyle, all power to you. But it's like
it's hard for the average person to make a stance against these people because. What the fuck? We need them for everything.
Yep.
Like, my shirt probably has something from...
Well, do you have any, like, spandex? Have you ever owned spandex?
Well, yeah, I wear leggings, like, every fucking day.
That's the thing. Well, and they don't actually own it anymore, but in 2004, the DuPont company sold its textile business, which included some of its best-known brands, such as Lycra or spandex, Dacron polyester, Orlin acrylic, Antron nylon, and Thermalite. But they sold it to the motherfucking Koch brothers, the Koch Industries.
The motherfucking Koch brothers.
Who are another fucking family that probably deserve their own podcast at some point, because they are also control almost everything, it seems like, too. But at the end of the day, most of us are using DuPont products almost continuously throughout the day. It's just a fact.
Yeah. Yep.
Whether it's General Motors, or when we're talking about General Motors, the explosives, the gunpowder monopoly, the chemical monopoly, which they literally have tens of thousands of products. You can actually go to their website, the DuPont website.
It's so funny that like we literally learned that monopolies are done, like it was shut down.
Oh, I know. That's what they want you to
believe.
Pretty
much everything is a monopoly. And most of it traces back to one of these five fucking families.
Yeah. Ridiculous. They're all benefiting off of each other because... What do you know? The fucking DuPonts are in close cooperation with other elite families involved with oil. So what do you know? Bushy boy, Rockefellers.
Bushy boy.
Because so many of the DuPonts products are derivatives of petroleum products. So they all finance each other. They all benefit off of it. And because of this, their total worth is literally in the billions of dollars. Not to mention their enormous power they wield because of this. In fact, the very survival of the United States military is dependent upon military products of the DuPonts. When you're talking about Kevlar, Teflon, these are heavy-duty materials that are used to make bulletproof vests, things like that. So they're like things that we need, but they maintain the control over it. And its ventures as military munitions supplier expanded from that point, and the company played a key role in actually the Manhattan's project's development as well, and production of the first atomic bomb, this is true, which the U.S. readily used to decimate Hiroshima and Nagasaki during World War II. I believe they supplied the plutonium for that, if I'm not mistaken. They supplied some of the raw materials they needed in order to make the atomic bomb.
Wow.
Which is...
These families are just so great. So great. Thank God.
Bringing so much joy to the world. Joy to the world. I don't know why that came to my head. DuPont. So the DuPont reportedly produced 4.5 billion pounds of military explosives used over the course of World War II. That's fucking crazy. Now, this is interesting. So the one in particular author that I got a lot of the research from actually found an article from the Aviation Week in Space Technology. It's a magazine where it talks about sophisticated composite materials that DuPont is producing for state-of-the-art space and aviation vehicles. And this particular author believes that some of these composite materials are finding their way to secret UFO bases, and DuPont may well be producing some of the parts for these secret anti-gravity machines that we believe the military has, which is very interesting. So, whoa. I mean, it makes sense because, like we've talked about, in the past, like it seems very likely that the government, the military, and these black op programs have, you know, these UFO vehicles, these flying saucer types, anti-gravity craft that they've already created because they've, you know, reverse engineered alien technology, however you want to put it. But the DuPonts could very well be involved with that as well, which is interesting. Because the article that he mentions states that the Boeing Defense and Space Group, Lockheed Aeronautical Systems, General Dynamics, and DuPont and Hercules Incorporated are working together on aeronautics projects. So definitely, helping supply materials for Boeing and Lockheed, which are obviously making planes and military vehicles and things like that. So it seems likely that they might be involved in the production of flying saucers, which is interesting.
That's so
crazy. Or at least being a leading supplier for advanced U.S. military programs. So that's the thing. And that's what's so crazy about the DuPonts and what makes them sort of one of the top bloodlines is because they are huge fucking family, and they have so many different companies and so much reach into all these different industries. So one of the main things I wanted to talk about, and one of the main things that DuPonts are known for, because their industry is primarily around textiles and all these different polymers and nylon, spandex, all these different things, has to do with their direct support for the 1937 Marijuana Tax Act and the prohibition of hemp,
aka the biggest bullshit.
The biggest bullshit that ever happened, that should have never happened.
I know, it's really sad. It's really sad because a lot of people are very ignorant around this topic as well, in their understanding of marijuana because of shit like this.
Yeah, which literally I want to do like a podcast episode on like the history of like hemp and marijuana, because it's very interesting and it's very obvious what happened here.
Right.
Because with the 1937 Marijuana Tax Act, what happened is that there was a person that was very big in the timber industry, so wood, trees, cutting down fucking trees, and then the DuPonts basically wanted to outlaw marijuana and hemp because they wanted people to use their, you know, technology of nylon, and the timber person wanted to use wood pulp to manufacture paper in 1937. And so if you don't know, hemp is like literally a miracle plant. It can be used for all sorts of things. You can eat it, build things, make things, paper, everything.
It's a plant.
It's a plant.
I'm so sick of people getting weird about it. It's a fucking plant. Like, it was clearly here to be used by us. It's like aloe.
Yes.
They don't outlaw aloe. I'm surprised they don't. Honestly.
Frustrating. You're totally right.
I know. We were getting comments about, like, the whole pharmaceutical industry and being against that and someone was like, the pain meds that they are able to give work way better than CBD does. Arguable. The doctors have not been able to give me a single thing that's not obviously like addicting or could kill me.
Doesn't.
That would actually help me. CBD is the only thing that actually has made a difference in my pain.
No, absolutely.
Advil doesn't. Tylenol doesn't, whatever. It's just frustrating.
Here's my argument for that person.
Like, why are we against the farm? That's what they're asking basically. It's like, why are we against it? Because if we were sick,
right,
if we had cancer,
would use it. Yeah.
Yeah, we would probably use it. And,
yeah, because
and
that's
they,
all
they
we
made
have
the
available.
Argument that, you know, I get my blood drawn and I am getting tests. I've been seeing doctors for, I guess, close to 10 years of my life trying to figure out what the fuck is wrong with me. And no one's ever helped me. Like, I've had probably close to 15 doctors now. No one's ever helped me. And yes, I still go back, but nothing's ever helped. And I'm still going back because I have hope that maybe it will. But as of right now, the only thing that's actually helped me is CBD. And that's just the answer.
Well, that's the thing. And like, my argument for that person is if we look at the amount of money, time, research, minds that are put into these prescription drugs and all these, you know, all these big pharma drugs that come out.
Yeah.
Imagine what we could come up with if even a fraction of that time, money, and scientific minds and research was put into marijuana and the hemp plant and CBD and all of these different natural kratom, all these different plants that literally have these naturally occurring chemicals in them that literally heal us.
Because we could still like mass produce drugs and it could still be part of big pharma, but they don't use them as an ingredient. And it's not addicting. CBD is not going to get you addicted. Marijuana is not going to get you addicted. I mean, to the point where you're having withdrawals, maybe you can be dependent on it, of course. Like fucking anything, Facebook, social media, anything. But
and I mean, the CBD can be extracted naturally from hemp. And already big pharma, I think I just saw an article, is coming out with synthetic CBD. Like, they're literally trying to make,
well, they're gonna have to, because people are figuring it out. Like, my grandfather's very I guess traditional, and he has been in like insane pain for years now, back pain to the point my poor grandfather can't sit down. Like, it's so bad. His tailbone's all fucked up, and so he has to either be standing or sleeping. So he finally, after seeing so many doctors and spending a lot of money to get answers, has not been able to find a single answer. And just recently he started using CBD and it's already helping. It's the only thing that's helped so far. So at least with pain, like, so
yeah,
I think it's a shame how many people are closed-minded about hemp. It's just ridiculous and sad,
but
it's not really their fault at the same time, because we've been fed to believe that the doctors have all the answers, that the pharmaceutical brands have all of the solutions, and they just do not.
No. And if you don't believe us and you want to try CBD for yourself, guess what? We got a great deal for you. Go to BilegalMeds.com, use code MileHigher for 20% off of all sorts of CBD products.
I've got lotions. The Activate syrup in my drink right now. I just add it to my drink and it helps me. I just like take CBD throughout all day, every day.
So many benefits, you know, to it too. Too many.
It's
not going
to make your mind like, obviously marijuana is going to make your mind more like, you're gonna be high,
like,
or like
stony.
Stony. But CBD doesn't do that. Like, I feel the exact same. I just am in less pain and I'm happier because I feel I don't feel like I'm dying right now, you know?
Yeah.
And that's
absolutely
thanks to CBD. So I'll defend CBD and hemp till the end, bitch.
Absolutely. And I have zero pain issues. I have zero issues at all with my body, but I still consume CBD just because it helps me take the anxiety off a little bit, the stress off a little bit, helps me sleep better.
And how many people struggle with anxiety? Like, that's another thing, is how many people could use this and not resort to serious drugs. Like, I've said it before, I have people in my life that were extremely close to me and huge, huge parts of my life. And I've lost them because I've lost them to drugs. And I'll never get them back because they live in places where they can't have access to this.
Right.
And they need something. So it's hard.
They've been
through shit. It's a whole thing, but
that's the thing about it. And that's why the fact that the hemp plant was literally like illegal for so many years is like crazy. And I think that's actually just changing. I just saw another article that's like, I want to say it was the Senate or Congress or something. They're actually going to re-legalize hemp.
Yeah, because they're going to run out of, like, what are you going to tell people? Now people are educated about it. There are places like BilegalMeds.com where you can get this stuff. How long are you going to act like this is like some crazy drug?
They can't.
It's not.
And we can demand that we have this. This is our right.
But it's another way for them to control us, because at the end of the day, you can grow a marijuana plant in your own fucking house.
And they don't want you to do that.
And they don't want you to be able to do it and get it for free. And that's the thing about it. I saw a meme that was like of Jesus being like, why are you guys charging each other for marijuana and hemp? I made it a plant for a reason. It's supposed to be free. It's supposed
to be a weed, guys.
A way that anyone who needs it can get it.
Right. And it's easy to grow. It doesn't take a lot of work to grow it. And it can be grown like in mass quantity so quick, so easily.
So people would not need the pharmaceutical industry as much, especially painkillers.
And people and families like the DuPonts and others do not want that to happen. They do not want that to happen.
Of course not. Because then we won't need them as much. And they clearly want us to be depending on them for fucking everything.
Right. Exactly right. Exactly right. So.
God. Exactly right.
All right. So end of rant. No, seriously, it irks me.
I could go on about it forever.
I mean, we're such like, I mean.
I try to be patient with the really ignorant comments about it, because I know that like people just haven't had any exposure to it, or they live in a place where it's literally demonized.
Yeah.
And they've just been told lies.
Yep, exactly.
So
going on with the fuckery here.
Going on with the fuckery.
The DuPonts, of course, are heavily involved with the environment and agriculture.
Wow.
In the sense that their company, DuPont Pioneer, makes and sells hybrid seed and genetically modified seed, which goes on to essentially become genetically modified food, which, again, all of us consume genetically modified food, I think. I mean, some of us don't, but a lot, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean they're like genetically modifying it for, you know, evil reasons or trying to kill us or whatever. Right. A lot of times it has to do with
for financial reasons, have to consume things like GMOs.
Yeah,
you know, it's not easy for everyone to eat as healthy as we should be, because that's how the system's been like set up.
They've set it up to make it like it's so expensive to get organic, you know, like non-GMOs.
And the organic's a total fucking lie too. We can go into that in another podcast.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of it has to do with like resistance to different types of insecticides, herbicides, all these different things. Or, helping it withstand drought conditions, things like that. That's, you know, because like at the end of the day, I don't think we're going to be able to stop genetically modifying food, genetically modifying medicine, all these different things. I mean,
probably not.
That's just going to be a futuristic type thing. I mean, we talked about gene hacking and things like that, like altering genetic code. I mean, fuck, even people that grow marijuana, like in dispensaries here in Colorado, they genetically modify the marijuana seeds to make better fucking butt. Like that's what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that this is an evil thing, but it's good to note that they are a company that does this. And they're actually the second largest producer of genetically modified corn and soy in the world. And what I found interesting, I had no idea, was that the DuPonts, if you've never heard of this, there's something called the Svalbard Global Seed Vault, which is in a remote region of Norway. And it's essentially a doomsday vault. Is literally what it's known as. It's cold storage. So it's like a giant fucking underground freezer where they contain just thousands of different seeds for basically every type of like plant and food that can be grown on the planet.
And this thing is like bomb proof, right?
This is built to withstand a nuclear war, basically the apocalypse. Asteroids. It'll be here after the apocalypse, basically. Because the idea you know, something apocalyptic happens, or, you know, catastrophe happens.
Like, clearly,
we have a way
this,
to like regrow food and everything else, which seems kind of smart. But the DuPonts, the DuPonts Corporation actively funds this doomsday vault and ensures that its product can be replanted on the earth after a global disaster, which, you know, some people
be
are
setting
like,
them up for,
of course,
control in the new world too.
Right,
if they
of course.
Like had all of it.
If they
like
have
if
the
people
food,
had nowhere else to go, they have
good
to come to them.
Good point. Yeah, they have the control over the food, the seeds and stuff. So no, that makes absolute sense.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about something called chlorofluorocarbons. So DuPont, along with Frigidaire and General Motors, were part of a collaborative effort to find a replacement for toxic refrigerants in the 1920s, which resulted in the invention of chlorofluorocarbons, or CFCs. Which were created by Thomas Midgley in 1928.
I feel like I very vividly remember learning a lot about those.
Yes. So chlorofluorocarbons are ozone depleting chemicals that were used primarily in aerosol sprays and refrigerants.
Mm.
And DuPont was the largest CFC producer in the world with a 25% market share in the 1980s, totaling $600 million in sales. So some people say that these guys are, could be, you know, if you believe in chemtrails or, you know, that they're actively spraying aerosols on all of us, you know, some people might theorize that the DuPonts may have something to do with that as well, because they are this one of the largest chlorofluorocarbon producers in the world. Here's another. They deal with a lot of chemicals. So this is called perfluorooctanoic acid. And they've actually faced fines from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency and litigation over releases of the Teflon processing aid perfluorooctanoic acid, also known as C8, from their works in Washington and West Virginia. This PFOA contaminated drinking water also, which led to increased levels of the compound in the bodies of residents who lived in the surrounding area. That's fucking scary as hell.
That really is.
So they're not taking care of this the way they should be, and they're leaking this fucking acid into residents' drinking water.
Oh, that's so scary. That kind of shit has happened so much over the years.
This is crazy. A court-appointed C8 science panel investigated whether or not there is a probable link between C8 exposure and disease in the community, and they eventually concluded that there is a probable link between this acid and kidney cancer, testicular cancer, thyroid disease, high cholesterol, preeclampsia, and ulcerative colitis. Water contamination in the Netherlands and links to cancer are also being investigated. In 2014, the International Agency for Research on Cancer designated this acid as a possibly carcinogenic in humans. Really, you think? And actually, one Ohio resident was awarded $1.6 million when a jury in 2015 found that her kidney cancer was caused by this nasty acid in drinking water.
I'm sure a lot of cancer is caused by corruption. A lot of disease in general. Not all of it, clearly, but like a lot of people who have died because of actions other larger names have done, you know?
Yeah, especially, yeah. You know, you're absolutely right. So this C8 chemical, this fucking acid that the DuPonts use, there's been other cases. In fact, in December 2016, $2 million was awarded when a jury found it caused the plaintiff's testicular cancer and awarded punitive damages in the amount of $10.5 million. And this was the third case where a jury found DuPont company liable for injuries resulting from exposure to this chemical in drinking water sources. So they're literally leaking this chemical. They're not disposing of it safely. And they're leaking it into fucking drinking water that potentially anybody that lives near a DuPont fucking plant, watch out, because there's over 3,500 similar cases awaiting trial as of 2015. And DuPont has known about this link between this acid, this chemical, and cancer since 1997, and still a problem. And of course, when asked about it, DuPont maintains it has always handled C8 reasonably and responsibly based on the information they and industry regulators had available during its use. However, the jury concluded that DuPont did not act to prevent harm or inform the public despite the information available. Yeah, they definitely didn't do that. So here's some other things that they've done. In 2005, the company pleaded guilty to fixing prices of chemicals and products that used neoprene, a synthetic rubber, resulting in an $84 million fine. So again, sketchy business practices, not following rules and regulations that they should be. Their environmental record's even worse. In 2010, researchers at the Political Economy Research Institute of the University of Massachusetts Amherst ranked DuPont as the fourth largest corporate source of air pollution in the United States. Why does that not surprise me? One of DuPont's facilities was listed number 4 on the Mother Jones Top 20 Polluters of 2010, legally discharging over 5 million pounds of toxic chemicals into New Jersey and Delaware waterways. Dude, I can't believe this is even real, that they just do this.
It's really scary, because it's like, why are we letting this happen to us? Like, so many people will never look into this, will never know about this. And it's like our world is changing so much because of families like this. It's just insane.
So any of you guys out there that live near or in Delaware or New Jersey, definitely make sure you're checking where your water's coming from.
Start distilling it. That's what we distill our water.
Yeah.
It's worth the investment. Or like you can get the like jugs for like 99 cents.
But between 2007 and 2014, there were 34 accidents resulting in toxic releases at DuPont plants across the U.S., with no fewer than 8 fatalities. 4 employees died of suffocation in a Houston, Texas accident involving leakage of nearly 24,000 pounds of methyl mercaptan. As a result, the company became the largest of the 450 businesses placed into the Occupational Safety and Health Administration's Severe Violator Program in July 2015. The program was established for companies who have repeatedly failed to address safety infractions. So basically, the DuPonts were like, we don't give a fuck. We're going to continue making these profits at the expense of people's lives and health. It is essentially what
all
they're saying.
All these families have never given a fuck about
They don't
people.
Care. It's all about the money. It's all about the power, the wealth, and the profit at the end
and
of the day.
And this is why the world is the way it is today.
Yeah, exactly. No, you're exactly right. That's why, because these corporations get more and more power as the years go by.
They just don't care. Like
nothing happens.
The compassion between humans is like so minimal now that like we're letting this just happen and people will just continue to live in their perfect little bubble in their perfect little world. La, la, la. None of this is true because it's easier. But like we will eventually have to deal with this. Like maybe it's not in our lifetime, but in the future.
Oh, it is in our lifetime. This is not sustainable. It's not sustainable the way
it's really
it is.
Scary.
Yeah. And of course, they were a part of the Global Climate Coalition, a group that lobbied against taking action on climate change. I mean, fuck, that doesn't surprise me in the least bit, especially since they're one of the biggest polluters. So basically, they're like, fuck the planet. We don't care. We don't care about if people get sick. We don't care if we're polluting water and air. We just don't care.
Imagine if it was like someone else that was in charge of all these different industries, like someone else was the DuPont family and they were in charge of all these little things and they actually had the environment and people's safety.
Seriously, what if we had actual responsible people that cared and valued human life?
The world would be very, very different.
We need you, Tesla.
I know. We just need to like fucking start over.
We need a clean slate here. Because the problem is that the DuPont is literally one of the largest family dynasties. And the actual DuPont family total is estimated to have 3,500 members. That's a lot of
family.
It's a huge, it's
so it's
huge.
Not even families anymore. I feel like we always like in my head when we're saying these families, like obviously I know there's more, but in my head, I'm just thinking it's like these original, like, I don't know,
it's
five
become
people
so
family.
Much bigger.
It's so huge. Like, and that's how they're pulling this
they're
off. There's so many fucking people in on this.
And they have so many businesses under their control, so many industries under their control. And the Forbes magazine actually said, the DuPont own the nation's oldest billion-dollar family fortune, which is true. And their net worth is only supposedly $14.5 billion, but I guarantee you that's just like what's reported. And
right.
I mean, it's clearly like if you added all the members together, it's probably far more than that. It's probably hundreds of billions, I would imagine. But yeah, I mean, essentially every facet of our lives is influenced by products whose production is still ultimately under the control of the DuPont family. So that's just so crazy. I mean, I don't know. What are your thoughts on the final thing?
Just like overall,
like summing
all
up,
of them?
Yeah, just summing up like the five families. Like, what are your final thoughts?
My final thoughts are that if we don't fucking wake up and realize what's happening to us and stop just sitting back and letting this shit happen to us, that's the end of us. That's my thoughts.
And I mean, that's why, you know, like, I don't know if you guys, like, I follow an organization called We Are Change.
Yeah.
And they actually, like, report on this and, like, try to report on it. And that's the thing is, like, the mainstream doesn't report on this kind of stuff. They literally ignore
because
all of this.
Owned
right,
because
they're owned
them.
By them. Right, exactly. And any type of actual independent news organization, even for one of the news organizations that we have been fans of for a while, until recently, for me at least, is Vice. Like, Vice seemed like they were
You're not a fan of them now?
No, dude, because they started out as like an independent news organization, but they got bought out by Fox.
Oh, yeah.
21st Century Fox, Disney owns part of them. Like, that's the thing is they got swayed by the money and they got bought out. And now,
well, it's like the only way you can, like, grow is to do that.
That's the thing. Yeah.
But like, how, like, where are their intentions at, the owners at the top, you know? Cause they still, like, Vice just put out something about the Illuminati and like rituals and stuff. And they gave David Icke
if you watch it, a lot of times the way they make it I read a very biased article from Vice about, about aliens. It was very biased and very, like, basically, like, anybody that believes in aliens or anybody that, like, you know, even remotely entertains the idea or goes to, like, alien conferences or thinks they've had an experience. Did I say idea?
I think so.
But, like, basically he went to, like, one of the alien conferences and was, like, talking to a bunch of people, and, like, a lot of people, like, legit have these experiences with what they believe are extraterrestrials or UFOs, things like that. And basically this guy from Vice wrote this whole article how all these people are fucking crazy and out of their minds, and this is just a bunch of nonsense, essentially, which I think is so, you know, I don't know. I already feel like the people that they're hiring on as reporters and, you know, the Fox effect is starting to happen.
Well, yeah, the Fox effect is starting to happen, but, like, it's hard because That's the only way they're going to grow and, like, get the message out to more people. And they're really spreading, like, the truth about the marijuana industry, a lot of other things. And, you know, how, like, we'll see where it goes. We'll just say that. Because, like, we don't know what the, you know, main people at Vice actually think.
That's just one dude's article. But, I mean, it sucks because it's, like, they had really good content. And, I mean, yeah, they're still very open-minded about stuff. But
now they're linked back to probably these five families because Fox is, so.
Yeah, because, like, at the end of the day, like, the shit that they put out is going to ultimately reflect on the owners. And now the owners are Disney and Fox. So it's like they have to be careful.
Yep.
So, like, literally
adds a new dynamic to their work.
Absolutely. And so are there really any, like, truly independent news organizations? There's really not. There's just really not. Other than, like, the only one
there's some, but people, literally are like, oh, they're fake news. Right. They're, like, too small.
Right.
Sometimes I post articles from small independent organizations and people are like, I've never heard of them. This isn't CNN. So this is fake news.
Right.
And that's exactly how they wanted to set it up.
So, yeah, I mean, it's tough. It feels like we're, like, it's like hopeless sometimes. It feels like,
you definitely feel like, I mean,
what can we do? Like, the only thing that makes sense to me is, like, we have to fucking start over. We got to, like, there's going to have to be another, like, revolution or something.
I mean, I think this younger generation, even, like, younger than the millennials, is not going to take shit the same way and is going to look deeper and has more access to things. So I don't think we're hopeless. And, you know, things like our podcast, thanks to us, people are finding out about the truth. No, but for real, like, there will be more podcasts. There are more podcasts like us. There are more people that are trying to get this information out, and more people are going to know about it. Like, you know.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, if you believe that, you know, you believe in shifts in consciousness and you believe that things can, evolve as a human race and evolve our civil, you know. That's the thing, too. One of the things you have to remember is, like, a lot of these families are very, very old. And a lot of the people that were wrapped up in the Illuminati shit and all of the, like, craziness and stuff are dying. Like, Rockefeller just died. Like, some of the original members are dying. So the hope is that as time goes on through our lifetime, that, you know, the new generations can overpower the, you know, the old elite that have been running things for long. And at the end of the day, I mean, that's the thing. People are starting to wake up. People are starting to see through the bullshit. Both sides of the table, too, when talking about politics, right, left, middle, whatever you want to call it, both sides are starting to see it. I mean, some of us are seeing it from different perspectives. But at the end of the day, I think we're all starting to awaken from this illusion that we've been under that has been, you know, America for the past 100 years or so. And I think we're starting to get to a point where, you know, we can start thinking about what we want our future to look like. What do we want our society to look like? How do we want people to treat each other? You know, and I think you're absolutely right. I think the younger generation, people are starting to learn the truth about things a lot younger. People are starting to get their minds open a lot younger. So all we can do is continue that trend and continue putting out, you know, the truth about things and continue, you know, spreading information that gets suppressed and things like that, because it's important, and it's important in our evolutionary process. So, you know, I think that secret societies are kind of a thing of the past. And I think eventually it's, you know, it's just going to be like,
The new age stuff, the internet, access to information and, is just changing everything.
Absolutely. And the ability to anonymously release information, you know, WikiLeaks and all these different things. And
so funny how the older generations too, like, make fun of the millennials for like trying to be woke and like,
oh, I know. And they think they're so knowledgeable about everything and knowledgeable about history. They're and it's like, you're knowledgeable about the millennials history are going
to
be taught.
The ones that like grow up with the most access to the most information. And it's easily like it's in your phone. Remember that comedian we were listening to recently that was like, if you wanted to know something like back 20 years ago, you have to just like think about it all day. What comedian was that? He's like the peanuts thing. Like who created peanut oil? And he's like, well, I don't, like, you can't just Google anything. But, like, nowadays, you can literally, anything that pops in your head, you can learn about it on your phone, right there on the toilet or wherever you are.
Right, right.
There's people that just had to run around.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. To the library. Oh, shit, who was that? I know who you're talking about. Yeah, yeah.
Thought it was, I don't remember who it was. But, yeah, he was just like, you'd have to just all day be like, hey, do you know who created peanuts?
And oh,
like,
yeah, you don't have there's no Google. Way, like, we have information at our fingertips. Like, you can literally look up anything instantly.
Which just allows us to grow. And the millennial generation will be smarter just naturally because they have more access to things.
So
not all of them, but
not all of them. Some are going to be dumb and just follow the crowd. But, but like that's the main thing we want to promote on this podcast is we don't want to tell you what to believe. Mm-hmm. All we want you to do is try to open your mind and think critically about things that you may have thought about before. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, don't always just accept the first answer that you get. Question it. And that includes everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody that tells you things or tells you how things should be. Try to find out the truth for yourself. Find the truth yourself.
Yeah.
Is what we're trying to promote here. So thank you guys so much for joining us on this journey through these five families.
Yeah. Can't believe we're done with them.
These are just five that secretly control the world. And primarily the U.S., but there are actually many more families that we could go into in the future, maybe. So, but if definitely do your own research, look into it further if you want to know more. But hopefully, we gave you guys a good overview of the five families. So,
yes, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We will see you next time. Yes. Stay woke. I'm tired of kids.